Sikkim Sports presents the Sikkim Sportscast, a look at all things Baylor from recruiting to football, basketball, as well as news concerning the Big 12. Your hosts are publisher Kevin Lundquist and managing editor Jake Shaw. Our MC is Stephen Cook. Now it's time to talk Baylor, and here's Stephen Cook.
Welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook, here with your publisher, Kevin, the forehead Lundquist.
Hey, Stephen, how are you? Jake, always good to be with you.
And your managing editor, Jake Shaw.
Good to be back, guys. Looking forward to another podcast.
All right. Well,
better cool it on the enthusiasm there, Jake. You better just slow down there.
I really am looking forward to it. It's hard to contain. It's good to be back. You know, my week's not complete without a podcast, and I hope that's the same for all of our listeners.
Live it, learn it, love it.
Yeah, and Baylor had they just played their first Big 12 conference game of the year, and they're playing somebody this week. I can't remember who, but we'll get to them later.
It's Brandon Beck, and so
right now, let's Kevin, how do you grade Baylor against Iowa State?
Oh, I think I would give him probably a B. So right around a B performance, just because of the fact that they got in there, got a stranglehold of the football game pretty quickly, led 35-7 at the half, and I thought that they, even though they weren't exactly clicking offensively, and I guess, you know, Art Briles talks about the motto that's incorporated in the program called Be the Standard, but, you know, when you score 49 points, have over 600 yards of total offense, and you know that you didn't play your best, those are pretty nice goals to have and a pretty nice way of playing the game. I thought defensively, you know, their defensive line did what I thought they were capable of doing. They got a lot of pressure on. Added three more sacks. I think they've got 18 this year now. They haven't even been, and Petty or Seth Russell haven't even been sacked this year, so that's always a great sign there. But, you know, the thing I look about a defensive line, too, is I don't think you want to measure it so much by sacks, but you want to measure it, too, by maybe the hurries, the knockdown stats, those types of things. That really kind of tells you what kind of pressure they deliver week in and week out. And that front four is as good as advertised, and it's going to be fun to watch them now develop because to see what they can do against a quality opponent, the Baylor's first quality opponent in Iowa State, I thought they played really well. And for me personally, it was great just to have pretty much everybody healthy. I mean, Corey Coleman looked really good. What did he have, about 154 yards receiving, had a touchdown. Antoine Goodley, I guess maybe you could say he wasn't playing at full speed. Maybe he was a little bit cautious with the quad, but, you know, he still contributed. And then Clay Fuller made a late appearance, and it's looking pretty good in terms of just to look ahead real quick, it's looking pretty good to get Levi Norwood back this week in Austin. So overall, they did their work. They got what they needed to get done out of it, and 4-0, number 6-7 in the nation, and looking good so far. Nothing has changed in terms of what we think of this team either.
No, nothing has changed. If anything, I feel if there's any takeaway, you know, bad or good, I'd say it's bad. I'm usually the more critical person between the three of us or of the three of us, and I'm going to give Baylor a B-plus for the game. And the biggest reason why is 35-7 at halftime. Baylor, you know, has a small tendency, one that doesn't hurt them, but of getting huge leads and then maybe sometimes losing focus a little. It doesn't affect the bottom line, but I'm not going to let that change the grade. Now, had Baylor played like they did in the first half and the second half, it would have been an A-plus because, you know, they could have scored 70, and they probably could have had they kept Bryce Petty in. So, the defensive line, like you said, I thought it was their best game of the year. Maybe not statistic-wise their best, but going against a pretty good offensive line, which is kind of the strength of Iowa State's offense. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought they played really well. It was kind of bizarre to see Baylor just come out throwing. You know, the first three plays were all passes. I think it was the fifth or sixth play of the game where they finally ran it, which has been the opposite of, you know, the rest of the non-conference. And so, you know, that was pretty intriguing, and I think if anything, it's going to keep Texas on its toes because, you know, the first three games, Baylor's going to run it, and then you see him go on the road to Iowa State and throw it all over the field. And you know, Texas, you know, they're obviously every team has to prepare for both, but there's also some strategy and some schematics to it. And I think you know, Texas, they're going to be on their toes. I don't know. I don't think they're going to know, you know, what Baylor's going to come out with. But we'll talk about Texas later. B plus. I think it was a great performance.
And Sid, before you say something, I'm going to go a little conspiracy theory here, if you will. And I get the sense that, you know, what we saw from them in the first three games, and then with Iowa State, and all these different looks and different the way they come out these games, it's almost like they're showing all this because it's all about November 8th in Norman, and giving the OU coaching staff something to look at. Now, again, there's a lot of roadblocks in the way for both of those teams. Yeah. Oklahoma's got to go to TCU this weekend, which won't be easy. So I get that. But it seems like with everything that they're doing, that they're giving so many teams – again, I focus on Oklahoma because of the magnitude of what we think that game could be in a month or so. But it's like they're giving everybody so many different things to look at here. Just because, like you said, Jake, they open up at three straight passes. Steven?
Well, I generally don't give a whole lot of letter grades to games. You know, it's graded a win, and it's graded a solid win. It's a 21-point win over a team that gave Kansas State a game and over a team that beat Iowa. The things that y'all are talking about, and Jake, you had mentioned earlier that, you know, Baylor's playing it a little differently this year, and I think that this year what's happened is you're seeing Browse being able to work from a position of strength, and so I'm seeing Baylor going out more, and they're more trying to impose their will on other teams as much as trying to take what the other team gives them. And I think that Browse is also not tipping his hand as to what they're going to do when it gets hard. They've got it going their way they had it going their way all four of these games. So they really didn't show a whole lot more than they had to. And, you know, it's just something that I'm seeing that's different with this team this year is I think Browse really feels like they're – I think Browse thinks they're loaded this year, and I think he thinks they're ready. And so I think he's playing his hand a little bit differently.
Yeah. Steven, you mentioned differently. Something I noticed is that we saw the Baylor tight ends split out wide some against Iowa State, and maybe I haven't been paying attention, but I don't remember seeing that earlier this year, and I don't remember seeing it much last year with maybe Jordan Iver or Jared Monk. Usually they were in a tight formation, you know, flanking one of the tackles. So, you know, I think you're right, Steven. There's no doubt about it. This is the best offense he's had, you know, pound for pound. You know, he's had RG3 before and maybe better running backs like Lake, but I think top to bottom, this is the best offense he's had. So, yeah, I think he is at a position of strength, and maybe that's why things have looked a little differently compared to last year.
Well, also, you know, it used to be, like last year, they had to run up, like on Iowa State, they ran up 70 points on them. You know, they started trying to end the game at the start of the second half this year.
Yeah.
Last year, they weren't in the top 25, okay? This year, they're sitting number 7. They're positioned where they need to be, and I just think he's playing his hand a little bit differently.
No, I think that's a very astute observation, Stephen. I think there's something to that.
The other thing, what you were talking about with the tight ends, last year, I mean, I know that that Niver wasn't huge, but he was pretty big.
He was big.
And Monk was big. And so I think he kept them more blocking. I think that this year with the tight ends being a little lighter, that he feels like that they're a little bit stronger, that they have a little bit, you know, I think he just feels like that athleticism will be best used split out and running a few patterns as opposed to keeping them in the block.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for them to really feature the tight ends in the passing game other than blocking.
I think you're going to have a long wait.
I think so too, but I think there's a threat of it there, which might be enough.
I think there's more there are better options at the tight end, maybe not from a blocking standpoint, if you will, but I'm still of the opinion, though, that a guy like Trevon Armstead has a lot to offer. You know, he caught a couple passes in the opener against SMU, and again, I realize that, that is what that is, but I just find that interesting, though, that you could see him, you know, really, I mean, between him and let's not forget Jordan Fuhrbacher, who's already caught a couple passes himself, so you've got three tight ends that are involved in this, and between Gus and Jordan and Trevon, they've already got five catches, which I think what Baylor's tight ends last year caught a total of 20, if memory serves. Mm-hmm. So they're technically ahead of that pace. You know, but I think there is better athleticism, though, even though we probably won't see it from a production standpoint. Just what they're going to give Baylor in other areas is probably what we'll see.
Well, it's just something else. They may not catch, but if they just catch one or two passes a game, it's something else for the defense to think about. And also, I'd mentioned it to Petty, Browse, they kind of cut the session short, but they ran 97 plays on offense in this Iowa State game, and that was with trying to run the clock out in the second half.
So that's a lot of plays.
It is, but you remember a couple of years ago, we were talking about, we got to get fast. Well, now that they take it for granted. We're playing fast. They could have run 115 plays if they'd been trying to play it fast in the second half.
Yeah, I saw the last seven plays were all runs, trying to run the clock out. You know, they could run 10 to 14, 15 plays in that seven-play span if they wanted to, so they could have easily gotten over 100. Well, moving on from grades, Steven, what's your biggest takeaway? You know, just one point, one area, what's your biggest takeaway from the game?
I think top to bottom, this is the best Baylor team ever. It's not perfect. They're couple of things that concern me. I was a little concerned about the way the Iowa State quarterback was able to scramble. You know, everybody's talking about Ryan Reed. It concerns me that we're having some receivers get behind our secondary on occasion. Place kicking is a little bit of a concern, but, you know, 5 years ago, we would love to have had those be our only problems.
Yeah. That was several takeaways for the record, Steven. So I'm going to dock you some points.
I'm sorry, man. I had a stroke.
Kevin, can you do it in one takeaway? Just one.
The one takeaway? I would just say the emergence of Corey Coleman to this offense will demonstrate how big time this offense could be this year. I mean, I've talked about him all spring, and then with the ridiculous catch he made at the controlled scrimmage back in April, and I think he's destined to have a huge year, and he already showed it, and he's already missed three games, but I just think that his presence in this lineup is going to change so much in terms of how, you know, we had a lot of fun watching the numbers that they put up in the first three games, but I just think that Corey's presence, if he stays healthy the rest of the year, really gives this offense that different dimension at the wide receiver spot, and I think Baylor's off. And that's not an indictment on anybody that's played wide receiver here before, but I just think he's such an X factor that it's going to be fun to watch him and see what he can do.
Well, my biggest takeaway is somewhat related to that. I want to say is Ryan Reed, you know, the trouble at that cornerback spot opposite of Xavier Howard, but I kind of knew that going forward. What we didn't know is if Katie Cannon would still be an integral part of the offense with a stacked lineup. And so he led the team in catches. I think it was 8 or 9 catches against Iowa State. Not explosive yards, but my biggest takeaway is that they're going to make this true freshman a really big focal point of this offense, even though they have Corey Coleman back, like you said, even though Antoine Goodley's back. You got Jay Lee, you have Levi Norwood, as you mentioned, at the top coming back. And that's two seniors, a junior, and a sophomore, all of them with a lot of experience. But Katie Cannon is still going to get his touches. Not only that, he's going to get his targets. It's pretty apparent that he is a big part of this team right now and not just the future. And, man, I'm sorry, how many teams can hang with Antoine Goodley and Corey Coleman and Jay Lee, and then you got your running backs, and then still have to mark Katie Cannon, the guy that fast? I agree with one of your takeaways, Steven. I think this is the best Baylor team under Art Briles. I was skeptical about that before the year, but I'm starting to believe it now.
You know, I just one thing to piggyback, Jake, too, on KD. You know what was fun was that little wrinkle that they threw in there on that reverse to KD that went 8 yards. And if you start, if you add that up there, you know, it can come out of anywhere. But if you do a reverse to him or a jet sweep to him, or maybe it's a jet sweep to somebody else, but my gosh, with that kind of speed, and if you get a kind of a block on the ceiling, you know, then all three of those guys, him, Goodley, and Coleman, all three of those guys can get to the edge faster than a lot of other people can. So if you run jet sweeps or reverses to those guys, there's no telling what a play like that could do. That thing could break a game wide open. And it would be kind of fun. That would be your version of a track meet on a football field right there.
You know, you're right, Kimmy. We don't see Baylor do that much. You know, for as much as reputation as Baylor has as being this high-flying offense, they don't really resort to, you know, what people say trick plays or gadget plays. I mean, it's basically run up the middle or throw quick to the sideline or throw downfield. You know, you don't see a whole lot of reverses in this offense, and I'd like to because you got the speed to do it.
Oh, and I think they might.
Okay. One thing that throw out there, I was looking at a mock draft on a CBS board, and I'm thinking, Kevin, you said that they had some pro scouts out at the Baylor practice. They both mentioned one of the guys that I was kind of concerned about. They might be trying to grab early, Sean Oakman, but the other guy they mentioned in this mock draft was Spencer Drango. And both those guys are juniors, and it would really be great to see both of them stay for their senior year. But if they're already being mentioned in mock drafts, you know, they have to at least think about it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Question for you guys. I know my answer. I'm curious what you think. Say only one of them comes back. Which one do you choose to come back?
I think Oakman.
I agree. That's my answer, too.
Just because he doesn't have enough, you know, he was in and out last year. They kind of used him in certain situations last year. And I think if he gets another year, I mean, remember, he had to sit out and lost a year, so he's lost so much time.
Well,
the NFL has had a lot of stories where guys who haven't had a lot of playing time in their football career or whatever. But, you know, I think that the shadow, too, of the Lake Seastrung early departure and how that's turned out in the NFL might serve as a lesson or warning or whatever you want to call it to other guys that are thinking about doing it and saying, this is the risk you run if you come out and that sort of thing. You need to be ready.
Yeah, to that point, I mean, if he's projected first or second round, he's not going to have a fall. Like, Seastrunk wasn't projected that high ever. He just wanted to come out.
That's true.
Secondly, you know, while I think the defensive line is deep, Oakman is just a total difference maker. And, you know, I like Jamal Palmer and I like Javonte McGee, but Oakman looks like he's in a class of his own right now. Whereas I think the offensive line, you can move some guys around, and you have Ishmael Wilson, who's playing this year, the transfer from A&M. You got Rami Hamad. You know, I think the offensive line could make do without Drango next year and be just as good. Whereas I think the defensive line would still be good, but you'd lose something with Oakman. I think he'd make the bigger impact, so that's why I would pick Oakman to come back.
Well, sure, I would too, but if Oakman did come out, all you would have to do is you just have Javonte McGee just stand up on the edge, and you keep Palmer on the other side, and your problems are set, and, you know, everything is set.
That's true, but there, I mean, find me another 6'9", 280 guy.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
there are a dozen, aren't they?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You just want to hold on to someone like that as long as possible, and you know, I think he's going to be gone if he keeps playing at this rate, but that's the guy I'd choose. But anyway, that's a probably a hypothetical that might never come up. So what do we got next, Stephen?
Well, I don't think there's been a whole lot going on in recruiting this week, but Kevin, can you give us a quick roundup of what's going on in the world of Baylor recruiting?
Yeah, I just had a chance last week to go look at Montrell Wilson, the Keller Fossil Ridge safety, played against Justin Northwest. He has such long strides, and when I watched him, and he just looks like a safety, just because how tall he is at 6'3". But he moves pretty well. Pretty good run support guy. Came up with his first interception last year. He's a guy that I think he may get a couple more offers late just to see if somebody might be able to try and convince him to take a look elsewhere. I don't think that'll happen, but the more I looked at Montrell last week, the more I came away saying he can hit. I mean, he's a player and he can hit. Then there were a couple of other running backs, too. Now, this is probably for down the line. Abram Smith, who's a kid from a 2017 running back from Abilene. He had about 135 yards last week against Carroll. I know he went to a Baylor camp back in July. Baylor really is looking at him. Steve Warren, the Abilene coach, is really high on him, probably the best running back that Abilene's had in about the last 5-10 years. Then another running back who I think that people might want to – well, I should say a couple of other – not running back, but a couple of other athletes that people want to take a look at out of South Grand Prairie would be the 2017 athlete, Jeffrey Okuda. I hope I'm saying that right. But, 6'1", 190. Baylor's been talking to him. I know that Jeff Levy has talked to him on several occasions. Pretty good vibes so far. Brent Whitson, the South Grand Prairie coach, says that there's a pretty good relationship starting there between the – between Levy and Okuda. So we'll see. And, of course, that's the school that produced Tony Nicholson, who's the latest commitment to Baylor. So some pretty good athletes there, just to touch base on. And then we're still kind of watching Fort Worth All Saints defensive defensive lineman Charles Williams, who doesn't have a Baylor offer yet, but he's a good-looking defensive lineman. He just picked up a couple of offers here. Recently, he's got an offer from Ohio State, and I think Baylor will kind of – my guess is that if Baylor offers him, it will probably be in the contact period, if you will, in December when the season is basically over and the coaches can get out and take a look at him. So just a couple of quick-hitting things. And then one other basketball note to let you know about. They finished up some in-home visits last week. Jerome Tang was in Tennessee. He went to go look at that center, that five-star center in Scal Labissiere, who named Baylor as one of his finalists. I think the idea is to maybe they can get him. I think there's some hope that maybe they can get him in for an official visit on the 11th TCU next week, because he's going to be taking an official to Knoxville this week in Tennessee. And then another guard that they're looking at that they did an in-home visit with last week by the name of Gerald Vick. He's out of Memphis. 6'5 kid, has picked up some offers here lately, and so we'll just kind of see how that situation turns out here for Baylor, because they lost a couple of kids who wound up committing elsewhere. That Rashard Odoms kid, that kid out of Copper's Cove, wound up committing to Oklahoma last week, and so that's what I've got for you on recruiting.
Okay, so right now they're kind of starting their ground game going out, 17, 18 now.
Yeah, and by the way, one thing I want to mention about the recruiting numbers, or at least the size of the 2015 class, and I know we've been throwing the number around 16, but doing a little bit more digging since the last time we talked about this, I would not be a bit surprised if we saw that number kind of tick a little bit higher, maybe 18. Of course, that's a moving target, but I would not be a bit surprised if we went a little bit higher. And again, that depends on the guys that are coming out in the draft, that declaration. And see, that's the thing too, Jake and Steven, is that if you have Durango in Oakland declare, boom, that just opens up two spots for you right there. So those are two things to consider when it comes to that. So, again, now that's all I've got on recruiting.
Okay. All right. Well, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we will take a look at Baylor getting ready to play that university about 100 miles south down the road. We'll catch you on the flip side.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SickhamSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting side, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports' Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
And welcome back to the Sikkim Sportscast. Full disclosure, I'm a graduate of the University of Texas. Just want to get that out there before we start this segment. This game is a big game, and one of the reasons is because, it's something that we haven't really talked about. Everybody's talking about the big showdown with Oklahoma, but whoever wins this game is going to be tied for first place in the Big 12. Now, they'll be tied with a couple other teams, but whoever loses this game is going to be having a problem getting into the Big 12.
Yeah, yeah. Full disclosure, I graduated from Baylor, so get that out of the way. No, it's true, Stephen, and you know, Oklahoma losing to Texas last year, you know, cost them a shot at possibly winning a Big 12 title. You know, just like Oklahoma State losing at West Virginia. So yeah, everybody's talking about Baylor and Oklahoma, but that game can be meaningless if you don't win all the others. So, you know, of course, Baylor's definitely not overlooking Texas. You know, that's even stupid to think about. So, what I want to get into is the trash talk, and I know there are differing views on whether it makes an impact to the game or not. I have my opinion. Before I give it, I want to hear y'all's.
Oh, you know, it was kind of humorous to kind of listen to some of the talk, you know, especially the quote about saying, well, we're still Texas and they're still Baylor. And, of course, there was the legendary comments that Steve Edmund, the linebacker, made during spring last year or earlier this year when he called Baylor trash and all that kind of nonsense. And, of course, he was reprimanded by the Big 12 on that. I mean, there's always going to be that. I mean, you never hear this in the professional ranks to the degree where it kind of gets personal. Actually, there's a part of me that kind of likes it, only because of the fact that it kind of adds to the spice. I think what this has done, though, is I think that this really, to me, this demonstrates how much Baylor has really kind of gotten to Texas here, and Texas, who used to look at Baylor as the kid brother that you can kind of just poo-poo and kind of move to the back of the room, no longer can do that because Baylor has kind of had their way with them in three out of the last four meetings and is coming into this game as a two-touchdown favorite in this game. And they're probably going to win this game pretty comfortably if it goes the way all three of us think it's going to go. And I think that really bothers the bejeebers out of Texas. So I think
of course.
And I think part of it is because Baylor's a better team. I mean, and plus the fact that, you know, that Charlie Strong probably did the right thing and might be sacrificing this year for the long term because he's already kicked off nine members of this team for whatever reasons that were whatever they were, but I think it really bothers the Texas nation that Baylor has reached this point to where not only are they beating them quote-unquote consistently, but they're also beating them in the recruiting game. Now, having said that, that Texas has taken three Baylor recruits from the 2015 class, all of which that I would suggest to you that Baylor is going to say, that's great that they had them and they lost them, but I don't think Baylor's losing a lot of sleep over all three of them either, and that's no disrespect to any of those three kids. I just think that Baylor is at a point where they're in the game, they're really in the game, and everybody needs to pay attention to it, and I think it bothers Texas because now that's another school that they have to battle with for recruits besides A&M, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, and Tech to some extent.
Yeah, I mean, I think these comments are a lot in response because they do feel threatened. That's kind of what you were getting at there. Not only should they feel threatened, they should know that they've been passed by, but I think it's a sign of just why Mack Brown did have to go, even though, look, you know, where he was last year, the team wasn't that bad. It was just bad compared to what he had accomplished previously. But my point is, there was that sense of entitlement, and you see a guy like John Harris, the Texas receiver, making these comments. He's a senior. He's been around for a while. He hasn't had the influence of Charlie Strong. You're not going to see a guy like this. You're not going to see a Charlie Strong player in 4 years say that, and because that's just not the way Strong runs a program.
Right.
I've never told this story on our side or obviously in the podcast, but I have it from a good source that the year after Texas lost to Baylor in 1997, it was the end of the John Makovic era, and they hired Mack Brown. Mack Brown comes in, and according to a good source of mine, one of the first things he told the team, you know, he's never coached a game at Texas yet, but one of the first things he said is, with me here, you're never going to lose to Baylor again. And I was told that story, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago, And it could be legend, but I think even if it is, it just shows the point that, you know, what Mac Brown is trying to do is just make them feel like they're better than everyone else. And if, at one point they earned that, but they lost that right a while ago. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of the Texas players are still holding on to that sense of entitlement, saying we're Texas. Our Riles, like you said, his response was legendary. Yeah, well, TCU is TCU and Oklahoma is Oklahoma.
That was pretty funny.
It was great. Yeah, and you know, the thing is, Harris was trying to slam Baylor, but there's not a person involved with the Baylor program who's not proud of that fact. And I'd say 90 to 100% of them wouldn't trade places either. Going back to my original question was, will it affect the game? Usually I say no, trash talking is just trash talking, but man, I think they've really poked the bear, to use a terrible pun, and I think Baylor...
Can I go...
And so. Yeah, well, you know, we're like on our 12th podcast and no one's used that yet, so I think we had to get it out there. No, I think Baylor's going to come in angry, and I think it you know, Baylor... The guys are going to be thinking about these comments during the game. They're going to be wanting to prove, yeah, we're Baylor, and you're not. And currently Baylor tramples on Texas. I think it's going to make Baylor angry, and I think it will affect the game.
You know, it reminds me, and I'll Steven, I'll let you jump in here after I make this point, is, you know, it's kind of like the comments that Harris made. It's not your inadequacies that they can't deal with. It's their own. And so they lash out like they are. And I think that's why you're seeing what you're seeing. And if that's all Texas has in its bag, rather than them trying to prove it on the field, then I think we know what's going to happen on Saturday if Baylor plays the way we think they're capable of playing. Steven?
Well, part of it for me is that, you know, Jake, you said that, you know, a Charlie Strong player 4 years down the road is not going to be saying that. And for me, it's not so much about what the talk means. It's what it says about the program. And what it says is, you know, Charlie Strong comes in and he says, and he's got his five rules, and he's got nine players off the team. Probably several of those players are off the team because they failed four drug tests.
Yeah.
And, you know, he called Edmund in, chewed him out after the comments. And then he comes back, and it just tells you, he doesn't have this team where he wants it yet.
Yep, I agree.
And so, you know, to me, it's not so much, you know, does it jack up Baylor, does it do this, does it do that? It says that Charlie Strong still doesn't have them turned into Charlie Strong players. You know, for better or worse, he still doesn't have that done. And I get the sense that these guys still think they're kind of running the show, and they can go off. And one of the big things I picked up in the Monday press conference, you're going to get sick of hearing me talk about this, but, you know, Kirk Bowles was in there, and he asks Art Briles if Baylor's passed Texas as the premier football program in Texas. Well, Briles isn't going to touch that. And then he asked kind of another question. Petty comes out, a couple of the local guys, it wasn't just the guys coming in from out of town, a couple of the local guys quoted the tweets. That was when Briles said, yeah, TCU still see TCU. Then Bowles comes in and asks Petty comes out and says, I'm not going to talk about tweets, okay? Before press conference. He says, I'm not talking about tweets. So Kurt Bowles comes out and asks him a question about the defense and then says, hey, but you can talk about Steve Edmund if you want to. And Petty laughs and, you know, starts talking about the Baylor defense. Guy from the San Antonio Express News asks him if he wants to say anything about Quandre Diggs. He passes on that. I talked to the Shock and John Jefferson after, and you know they've looked at Texas film. I mean, you know they've already started talking about Texas. So have you had a chance to look at Texas yet? Nope.
They started looking at it Sunday, I think, yeah.
Yeah, but I said, have y'all had a chance to look at Texas yet? Nope. So you know Baylor's staying on script, and Strong can't get his players on script.
Yeah, it definitely shows the momentum of the programs. In Baylor, we've said.
It shows what the two programs are.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, Baylor's rolling forward. They're coming off a conference championship, and you know, Art Briles is in his what, seventh, eighth year here. I'm losing track. You know, he's every guy in the system he recruited, and that's not the case of Charlie Strong. He's trying to do a culture change there, so it's going to take a couple years. You know, the one thing I wonder about with Texas, and I'm kind of getting on a tangent here, is, you know, he's kicking off players. You know, these are good players he's kicking off, and, you know, he's just changing things. Yeah, that's great, but if he's losing games, I just wonder how long people will tolerate that, because, you know, Mac might have run it differently, but when things are winning, it didn't matter. So, you know, that culture change, while it's happening, some wins got to come eventually, and, you know, if Baylor beats the spread, and, you know, the 14-point spread, maybe beats it by even more, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, the patience is going to start running thin, even though it's his first year, not even halfway through the season, because, look, Texas, they want to win. They don't care if the guys are – really, it's true. They don't care if their guys are failing drug tests. They just want to win. That's just
– Yeah. Now, one thing that I do want to mention before, I do think it does kind of make a difference. When y'all were talking about him saying – we're Texas and they're Baylor, and we're still Texas and they're still Baylor. Everybody knows what that was meant to mean, okay?
Yeah, and, of course.
Yeah, I got it, yeah.
Yeah, and one of the areas where, Jake, where Baylor has been a little bit touchy is, you know, they have always been, they have been, with the exception of a few years under Taft, you know, Texas has pretty much owned the series.
Of course, yeah.
And so Baylor has now really worked hard and everything, but I think that there's a certain sensitivity in there. And this is kind of what I talk about when I talk about when I was talking about Briles working from a position of strength. Back when Briles' teams weren't that good, he talked more. You know, and now, you know, like if you watch that press conference, it's a game. It's another game. It's, you know, that's all it is. We're playing another game next week. You know, I mean,
he doesn't have to sell anything anymore.
Yeah, and that is something that you're really seeing. But I just got this kind of, we're not going to respond. But I got this kind of loading up feeling from the team. And I do think that, like with Iowa State, you know, I do think with Iowa State, you know, they went up there, they got that game in the bag. Hey, let's run the clock out and get out of here.
Wow.
I think I really do think I think Texas did make it more personal.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've said on our site numerous times, I said it last week before any of this happened, that if Baylor's up 28 in the third quarter, the starters might still be on the field come the fourth quarter. I think Baylor would like to make a statement more here than in Ames, but we're running long on this one, so let's. I want to move along and kind of just look at the actual on the field play and just how the teams stack up. I'll start by saying, I think this game can be a little bit similar to last year. The difference is, first of all, it's going to be about, I don't know, 40 degrees warmer, maybe 50. But other than that, obvious difference. Look, I mean, I just don't think Texas has much of a better offense than it came into, you know, Waco with last year. Different quarterback and some different personnel for sure, but same thing. Your quarterback is limiting your offense right now. Case McCoy had his obvious deficiencies, and I think Tyrone Swoops can be a great quarterback, but he's not there yet. I think their playbook is a bit scaled back, and I don't think Texas can keep up with Baylor's offense. I think Texas defense will have some success against Baylor, but in the end, I mean, if it's in the third quarter, it's a 7-point game. Eventually, Baylor's going to break through, and Texas isn't. I mean, that's my view in a nutshell.
No, I think you're right, Jake. I mean, look, Texas quarterbacks between David Ash and Tyrone Swoops have completed 82 passes, and 51 of those have gone to either John Harris or Jackson Shipley. Nobody else has more than 8. And so, and then you've got the divided carries, of course, with the running game between. Now, this will be the best running game that the Baylor defense will see between Jonathan Gray and Malcolm Brown. No question about that. So I think that'll be kind of interesting to see how the Baylor defensive line reacts to that, because Iowa State never has had much of a running game this year, and that showed. And then the other three teams, Buffalo, Northwestern State, and SMU, were just pathetic running the football. So yeah. I think this will be the best test that the Baylor defense will see for a team that wants to be a little bit physical. I mean, Texas has to be physical. It can't throw razzle dazzle. It might throw a trick play in here, you know, there and there. But they're going to have to bootleg Tyrone Swoops, you know, some half rolls here, things like that, to get him out of the pocket, to get him away from the rush. And he might have to freelance some things in order to create yards when nothing is available downfield. I think they're going to try and establish whatever they can with the running game, because if you were to ask Tyrone Swoops to try and win this game by himself, it's impossible for it to happen from what I can see. And so, anyway, so what I think is that the issue is going to be how well the Texas defense can try and clamp down. It's a pretty good defense. They shut out a pathetic Kansas team, we know. But it's a good defense. They've got a pretty good secondary led by Quandre Diggs. I don't think there's enough coverage options back there. They might have to go nickel and dime packages consistently with that defense and change the way they look in order to deal with that, because, you know, Charlie Strong even admitted that they're going to stress the heck out of this defense. And if you get Texas to get away from their base and where they have to do more nickel and dime packages, play in and play out, I think that really plays into where what Baylor can do with the running game. And see, that's the whole thing with Baylor, is that they've got so many options with the offense, guys, that even if one part gets limited in some respect, the other one can pick it up. And I just think that I could see Baylor getting pushed for maybe a half and then push and then running away with it. I mean, Texas is gonna, I said this last week about Iowa State, where they're gonna give them their best shot. Well, they got it pretty much in the first quarter, and then before the Richardson turnover. Now, that was where Iowa State had it at the game, had its best shot. With Texas, again, they're going to have – I've said all along that Baylor – the only way Baylor loses a game this year outside of just playing straight up against Oklahoma is that they're going to help somebody beat them with the turnovers and the costly penalties and misfiring in the red zones, things like that. Yeah. That's the only way I can see Baylor losing to somebody other than Oklahoma this year straight up. And so I could see Baylor winning this game something like, you know, 47-17.
Okay, every game is about the matchups. Okay, and that's, you know, when I'm trying to figure out what's going on, you look at the matchups. When you look at, I think, two of the players that got kicked off were offensive line starters for Texas. They had another guy broke an ankle, and he's out for the season. Mm-hmm. So three of Texas' offensive line starters are gone. Right. Against what is arguably Baylor's best unit.
Yep.
That's huge. On the running game, yeah, I agree. They've got some pretty good running backs, but are they going to have the blockage? I'm not really sure that I see it. I think that the other thing, I think that Texas has some good defensive backs. I don't think they have enough good defensive backs. What y'all are talking about with splitting the tight end out, hey, guess what? Guess what will force them into putting those nickel packages and stressing out those D-backs is if they split that, if they start splitting out the tight ends, plus running a four-wide set. So, you know, I don't, the one area where, the areas where I see Texas probably being competitive, I think, in the kicking game, they've got a pretty good kicker, but Baylor's defensive line against Texas offensive line, I think, is a mismatch. And I think that the Texas defensive line might be able to stuff the run some against Baylor, but I don't think they'll be able to get to Petty. And I think that Seth Russell would be starting for Baylor if he was on that squad right now.
Starting for Texas, you mean?
So what?
Seth Russell will be starting for Baylor?
No, Seth Russell will be starting for Texas.
Okay, yeah, you said Baylor
right now. And Swopes, they're dealing with the limited playbook. And you know, one of the things that tells you how well Baylor's linebackers have done this year? We haven't talked about the linebackers.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're looking at one soft spot that we're worried about in the defense.
And, yeah, that's it, really.
And I think Baylor takes ownership of the game pretty early.
Yeah, I think, you know, you mentioned Quandre Diggs. He's the Texas cornerback. He said someone asked him about wide receiver university, and he said he's never heard of that. Nobody has, basically. I think Baylor just might come out five wide early on. You know, spread them out and say, all right, which one of these wide receivers are you going to shut down, Quandre? And then, you know, are your colleague is going to shut down the other four. I don't think Art Briles is beneath doing that. Real quick, this segment, where I think we're at 21 minutes, so real quick, we have a question. Who needs this game more? It's an interesting question. My first thought was Texas, with strong, needs to win over the fan base, and a win against a ranked team would do it. But look, they've lost two games. In the grand scheme, it doesn't mean anything. Baylor wants to get the playoffs. I think it means a lot more to Baylor.
I think it means a lot more to Baylor, too, just because of the expectations of their push to try and get to the Final Four.
Yeah.
I think in terms of where the teams want to be at the end of the season, I got to tell you, man, I think it means more to Texas.
Wow.
I don't think it means more to Texas. I think it's a more important game. If Texas wins it, it's a lot bigger win for Texas than it is for Baylor.
I would agree with that. That's a great point.
That's a good point, but it's a bigger loss for Baylor than it would be for Texas, too, on the flip side. Everybody's expecting Texas to lose this. No one's going to – if they lose it even a close game, people are going to say, wow, they played Baylor close. If Baylor loses, it's 16-point favorites. I think it's a bigger loss for Baylor. So maybe it's even, Steven. Hey, how did I not use that earlier?
Yeah.
You can poke the bear and even, Steven. Golly.
I'm making puns when I'm not even trying to.
When we come back, we will have an interview with Nick Jean-Baptiste, the former Baylor defensive lineman.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SickhamSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting side, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports' Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
Welcome back to the Sikkim Sportscast. This is Jay Shaw, managing editor of SickhamSports.com. Today, we're fortunate to have a guest, Nick Jean-Baptiste, former Baylor Bear, graduated in 2011, I believe a four-year letterman. And looking back at your bio, I was reminded you played in 49 out of 50 games while you were at Baylor. That's pretty dang good for a walk-on. Let's go back a little bit, though. You're coming out of Straight Jesuit in Houston in 2007. Nick, what was your recruiting situation like back then? I mean, what were your options then?
Well, I really didn't have a lot of options back then. I was recruited maybe by a few D2 and NAIA schools. Like, I heard from maybe Midwestern State. Mm-hmm. There was Concordia University out there in Nebraska. But that was pretty much it. Like, I was pretty much thinking about walking on to most schools, trying to get a shot at least. Like, I was looking at SMU, TCU, Baylor, and then that was pretty much it for my recruiting aspect.
Yeah, what was it? Were you a late bloomer? Was it playing at a private school? Do you have any understanding why maybe teams were overlooking you?
Well, before my junior year, I didn't go to any camps, which I'm starting to learn now is a really big deal. So going into my junior year, I didn't go to any camps. I just worked out at my high school. And then during my junior year, I actually broke my ankle. So I was out for about 6-7 weeks. So I didn't get to play. So I didn't have much tape going into that also. And plus I wasn't that big back then anyway. I was only about 250 and playing offensive guard. I wasn't even playing defensive tackle yet.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, I understood. I could understand why there weren't a lot of people, you know, clamoring for me and stuff. So
yeah.
Yeah,
I know by your senior year, Baylor listed you at 335. That's a big weight gain.
Yeah,
that's a good thing, though, right? That's a good thing.
Yeah, my friends still talk about that. They remember me back. My high school friends remember me back in the day, and they're like, "Geez, I remember when you were still playing linebacker."
Well,
freshman year in high school.
So you walked on 2007. Walk on 2007, you redshirt that year. 2008, pretty interesting year. It's your first year to play. It's also the first year of Art Briles. You played in all 12 games that year. And then in 2009, you were awarded a scholarship. You know, how did that go down? Was it a big surprise? Was it something they had been kind of promising you?
Well, 2008, I know I obviously looked at the depth chart. There weren't too many guys that were playing, and so it left me out there to play, and I got my opportunity when Coach Acuff came. And, you know, actually the funny part, he called me that offseason before they really got there, and he told me that I needed to be ready, you know, because he's going to give everybody a shot. So I did my best during that offseason, had a good spring, you know, and I got the opportunity in that fall to be able to play. I got some pretty decent times at my freshman year. I got to play a little bit, got my feet wet. And I guess just being in that rotation for the first 2 years, just, I guess, you know, Coach Browse and those guys felt they felt I was deserved of a scholarship. So, you know, I was pretty excited about that. First thing I did after I talked to Coach Browse and he told me I was getting a scholarship, I called my mother. She was so excited. It was great being put on scholarship.
Yeah, I imagine so. I know Colin Brent's starting at nickelback this year for Baylor in defense. He had a similar path. You know, he's a walk-on. He wasn't an awarded scholarship until this season, though. So it took some time. Part of that is Baylor's is deeper now than they used to be. What was life like as a walk-on, maybe compared to being a scholarship player? Was it quite a bit different?
Well, besides, you know, the meals and stuff like that, I feel like it wasn't that too much different. You know, maybe we were, you know, more of the walk-ons, you know, doing scout team and stuff compared to the scholarship players. But for the most part, like, those guys treated me pretty much the same. Like, I was friends with all the scholarship players. And the coaches, they pretty much, if you could play, they didn't care if you were a walk-on or not. They would sit there and they would respect you, so. You know, it wasn't too much different, especially when Coach Browse and those guys came in.
Yeah, that was my next question, and this might take two or three podcasts, but I guess quickly, or what would you signed with obviously Guy Morris when he was head coach in 2007. You only were there for him maybe a semester, that's it. But still, in that time compared to, you know, under Briles, just what are the biggest differences you noticed and just how they ran the program?
Well, it was just the attitude, that's the biggest difference. You could tell as soon as Coach Browse brought in, you know, like Coach Cos, like there was a big difference between the last strength coach we had. It got so much, it was so much different. Like our freshman year, you know, it wasn't as, the weight room wasn't taken as seriously, conditioning wasn't taken as seriously when my freshman year. But once Coach Cos, you know, Coach Acuff and Coach Browse, those three guys were pretty much people I was involved with most. Those guys were completely different from the guys we had beforehand. The attitude was different. Just the way we practiced was different. You know, it was a lot more fun to get out there than before that freshman year. But yeah, that was a big difference between those two coaching staffs.
Did you know, I mean, did you have a pretty good feeling maybe after 2008, your redshirt freshman year, Browse's first year, even though y'all went 4-8. Did you have a pretty good feeling that things were going to be turned around?
Well, yeah, you're always going to feel positive about that. Coach Kyle obviously instilled that he's always thinking positive. You never want to let any negative thoughts in. And so every year we thought we were going to be pretty good. It's just things wouldn't work out or something like that. We just didn't play up to our ability. And so, you know, like after our first year with Coach Browse, we pretty much figured, like, okay, this is going to be something. We're going to do something special. We're going to take over the Big 12. It's just going to take. It's going to be a matter of time. We just have to keep working and keep working. Mm-hmm. You know, year after year, we got progressively better, and you can see it obviously with the win loss column. And then finally, you know, last year, you see, we finally broke through and became Big 12 champs.
You know, what's it like for the communication or relationship with past players? And the current staff, from what I can tell, they've been very inviting of past players, not only who played, you know, like Kendall Wright and you and Terrence Lynn, but guys even before that. I mean, what's kind of the vibe like around Baylor for an ex-player?
Oh, it's great. The coaches, they still welcome you back if you had, like, still talked to them and stuff. So I still talked to Coach Acuff. I talked to him on occasion, and, you know, we talk about how life's going between the both of us. You know, because I was good friends with, I mean, I loved coming over to his house, you know, hanging out with his kids, And so, so like a lot of the ex-players, they come back. It feels like we're back at home. And, you know, it's pretty exciting just to go back to Waco and visit with the coaching staff, the equipment staff, even like, the training staff. We still hang out with those guys. And so, you know, it's not like they're casting us away or anything like that. You know, trying to ignore us or anything like that. It's been great.
Once again, this is Jake Shaw. We're on the Sikkim Sportscast talking with Nicholas Jean-Baptiste, second team All-Big 12 as a senior in 2011, four-year letterman, former walk-on earned a scholarship. I'm going to now kind of get a little bit more into the present, but also touch on the past with this question. Your senior year, you were pretty much the anchor of that line. You had some young guys like Terrence Lloyd and Gary Mason Jr., you know, some up-and-coming guys. I think Bo Blackshear was on that team. And I know that that's some talented guys, but from where y'all were in 2011 to what you're seeing with this year's Baylor defensive line, I mean, is there much of a comparison? Are they hugely ahead? How would you compare what you were playing with in 2011 to what they have now?
It's a little bit different, and they're a lot deeper. Those guys can go, like, I feel like I heard Coach Bennett say they can go almost nine deep. And watching the games, you really can see it because there's not much of a drop off when you rotate those guys in. Like, I mean, we had good players too, but mm-hmm. I don't know if we were at the talent level as that front four that are out there right now, because those guys play. They got a lot of sacks already this season.
Yeah.
They're doing a lot of good work out there. It makes it a lot easier for that back seven.
I bet. You know, that's why I asked that question, because, you know, I was wondering, because the defensive line, it's taken some time for that area of the defense to come together. But, you know, like I said, that 2011 team, you had some good names. You know, some of those guys were a little bit younger, but I guess this has just been a work in progress. Tell me obviously Sean Oatman is, he catches everybody's eye, even if you really don't even know what you're watching, just because he's big. But tell me about his, I guess, what kind of technique you see from him. I mean, obviously he's big and fast, but you got to know what you're doing out there. I mean, what do you see specifically from him that's making him kind of the player that he is?
Oh, he's really good with his get off. His first step is pretty great. He gets pretty much at least 2 yards off by each step he takes. And then his hand placement, where he gets like, well, I watched one of the plays where he gets his just hands on the inside of that, on the inside of the offensive tackle, and he's able to just drive him back. The way he works his hands in the pass rush was pretty good. Not pretty good. It's pretty great, because he's working and his hands are always moving, which is always going to be a plus, because you're trying to get those offensive linemen's hands, and he's always working. And another big thing, he's really violent, which for a defensive lineman is good, because you don't want to be, when your hands, you don't want to be timid or anything. So he's working him, clubbing, ripping, trying to get around that guy or go through that guy if he can. And that's been a big part for him too. Also, just not his, how big he is and stuff.
One of the reasons that, you know, we're talking to you today, obviously it's great to talk to a former Bear, get some insight, but you're now writing a story for SikkimSports.com each week. So you're breaking down the line play, both offensive and defensive, for Baylor. So in your story on Sikkim Sports, you talk about the offensive line, and you said, and you explain why, but you said, you know, you notice a difference in the offensive line against Iowa State compared to non-conference games. You know, what was the difference? Why do you think the offensive line was better this past Saturday?
Well, I think it was more of a chemistry thing than anything else, because you got a lot of new guys out there, especially in that interior three. And so it's going to take them a few games just to get adjusted to each other and learn how to play off of one another. It's like, especially what I was saying, especially like with Kyle Fuller at center, it's going to be, he hasn't played, nor has Hilliard or Blake Meir. So they're obviously going to have to learn how to, you know, work together, especially like on double teams and those reach blocks and working on it. So they know when he can release and get to that second level and get to the linebacker. Because if he leaves too early and Meir doesn't get enough of his guy, the defensive lineman could make a play in the backfield. Or if he stays on too long, that linebacker might make that play instead of him going up there to box him. So
For me, I feel like it's the interior, just them, you know, being able to, you know, to work together and that chemistry after these first four games. It took a turn in this Iowa State game, and they're going to only get better after this.
Yeah, you're talking about them getting the chemistry. My football career ended after my eighth grade year. The writing was on the wall that there was nothing ahead of me. But, you know, I played basketball through, you know, high school, and talking on defense is so crucial. And I'm curious, though, you know, how much talking can, you know, offensive linemen do? Is it all pre-snap? Are they communicating, you know, post-snap? Or, you know, what's it like to kind of build that chemistry? Or is it all just kind of unspoken? You know, how would you describe that?
Well, for the most part, from what I've seen, obviously, going against the guys, I feel like they make their pre-snap calls, but then obviously they're going to have to communicate during the play, and that's why they have to keep their ears open, especially like I was talking about when they're running these tackle end and end tackle twists where the defensive linemen are just like coming one way and then another one's coming around. They've got to be able to pass that guy off and let the other guy know. So the guard needs to let them know the tackle that there's a guy coming, and or the tackle needs to know let them know the end that I mean let the guard know that the end's coming. So they're going to make a lot of reads, but then obviously at the end of the day they're going to have to. The chemistry will be there. They'll know when or how to throw a pass off a guy or what to know is coming from, you know, one of their teammates. And so, yeah, it's going to be a little bit of all three, but I feel like mostly it's going to be obviously pre-communication, pre-snap, and then there's going to be some talk afterwards during the play.
Yeah, that makes sense. The running game, you know, people have, I don't know, they're not disappointed, but perhaps it hasn't been quite as explosive as the last few years. Have you noticed that too? Do you think it's just been fine? Or you know, I guess kind of what's your take on Baylor's running game through four games?
Well, it's been a mixture of, like I said, it's been the chemistry thing of them getting the push on the defensive linemen and getting, you know, just making the holes for the running backs. And then I want to say, I'm not really a running back, but I can't say if they're reading the right holes or they're hitting the hole hard enough to running backs. But I want to say it's a combination of the two. But from the O-line standpoint, like watching the O-line, they're gradually getting better, and you see it in the stat book. But they're getting better at it, and they're gonna turn a corner probably, hopefully, in this game.
Yeah, well, you know, I think part of it is Baylor just came out with such a boom last year that since that similar start wasn't quite there this year, that maybe people are, you know, wondering what's going on. But like, I completely agree with you. I think it's just new parts and new places, even at running back. And you know, I think they've been building each week and progressively getting better. Well, we've had you for a while. I don't want to take up too much of your time. So I got just one last question for you. Looking ahead to the Texas game. You talked about it briefly on your story for our website. I don't know how much you've seen of Texas. Obviously, you've seen a lot of Baylor, but you got the Baylor offensive line against the Texas defensive line and the Baylor defensive line against the Texas offensive line. Would you give the edge to Baylor on both, split them? You know, how do you see the advantages in the line play, you know, this coming Saturday?
Well, I'm thinking for the Baylor defensive line, they've obviously had the advantage because Texas has lost three of their starters to either suspension or injury. And their best blocker, Don Espinosa, he broke his ankle. He's done for the season. So they're going against four guys that can get to the ball and make a lot of disruption and backfill in the run game also. So I don't think I think our defense is going to do really well against their offense, our defensive line. Now, on the flip side, our offensive line is probably going against their first big test this season because they've got two really good players out there, two talented guys, Cedric Reed and Malcolm Brown. And I'm pretty sure that their defensive coordinator is going to be bringing some pressure too, so especially on the pass. So we're going to get to see a lot of blitz pickup that you didn't get to see last week against Iowa State, because Iowa State basically dropped seven and only rushed four guys most of the game trying to make Petty work for those yards. But I don't think that's going to happen this week. I think they're going to bring a lot more pressure. So we're going to see a lot more of our offensive line, you know, blitz pick up and see how well they do when other teams bring a lot of pressure. So it'll be interesting to see. But I think we'll be able to keep a clean pocket for Bryce. So
yeah,
I feel like it's still an advantage though.
I said that was the last question. I have one more. It's just kind of a topical thing right now. A lot of talk coming out of Austin from certain players really downplaying what Baylor has done. I'm not going to ask you to comment on that or Baylor's reaction, but I just want to know from a player's perspective, does trash talk come into play when you play another team? I mean, is it blown up by the media? I mean, how much would you say it actually matters?
Well, on a scale of 1 to 10, it's probably about, I want to say it's 6 or 7. If you hear a guy loud mouthing like that or just saying things like that, you're going to get fired up, but I mean, you're not going to let it sit there and take over just all your emotions where you're playing recklessly and you're just going to get yourself, you're actually hurting yourself better instead of actually motivating yourself. So, I mean, they'll come into play once the game starts. They're obviously not going to tee off on any guys that like try and put a bounty on anything. But it's obviously in their mind, but they're still going to be motivated. You're still going to play within yourself. So I feel like that trash talk, I mean, it's going to happen. There are going to be some guys that are, you know, that are confident in themselves. They're going to talk the talk. And obviously you're going to see on the field that they can walk the walk.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought. Once you hit the field, some of that kind of disappears, but still it's, I think it could be in players' back of the mind, especially when you got, you know, Jay Lee or Antoine Goodley, Corey Coleman, Katie Cannon, the list goes on and on, lined up opposite of Quandre Diggs, who, you know, took a dig at Baylor's wide receiver unit. So, you know, I'm curious to see, and I'm kind of with you. I think Baylor comes out and plays really well this weekend. I'm really looking forward to this game. Nick, thanks so much for your time. This has been a great time well spent. I hope we can have you back on the podcast again. But we're also really happy to have your insight on SickhamSports.com. Thanks for joining me, Nick.
No problem, Jake. Thanks for having me.
SickhamSports.com. Thanks for joining me, Nick.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SickhamSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting side, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports' Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
And welcome back to the Sikkim Sportscast. Now is the time that we are going to go around the nation and the Big 12 and look at some of the big games that are coming up. Let's start out with the national games. Jake, we have the team that both Baylor and Texas love to hate, Texas A&M, getting ready. They're ranked number 6 at the Mississippi State Bulldogs, number 12, and this is at Mississippi State. What are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I don't think we love to hate them. I think we have no choice. Just kidding, Aggie. I got Aggie family. As much as it pains me to say.
So do I.
Stephen, can you go back and censor that whoop from Kevin? Wow.
Aggies don't lie, steal, cheat, or tolerate people who censor whoops.
I don't know who I have in this. I'm going to have to make a decision now. I'm going to say Texas A&M because, I think, you know, their defense is bad, but when it comes down to it in this day in college football, if you got a great offense, you know, eventually you can overcome it, especially if, you know, Mississippi State has a good defense. It's not like it's out of this world good. And I know they have an improved offense under Dak Prescott, their quarterback, but I think Aggies surprised some people. I think it's an in vogue pick to pick against them this week, but I'm going to pick A&M. Again, I don't want to, but I think that's what my brain is leaning toward.
Kevin?
Yeah, I'm going to lean toward the Aggies. You know, the thing that was interesting is that really as much as we bash their defense, you know, last week against Arkansas in the second half, they were able to kind of take what Arkansas does best away from them and shut down the running game. Now, Mississippi State is a little bit more diverse, a little bit more spread open under Dan Mullen than Arkansas is over with Brett Bielema. But at the same time, A&M's rushing defense really did kind of show me something, the fact that it got a little bit physical, because I think Arkansas, between the two overtime, between the second half and the overtime possession, less than 100 yards total. And I think that was pretty impressive with the way they stood in there and shut them down, because after they fell behind 28-14, they really did a great job of taking a lot of things away from the Razorbacks. And, of course, they made Brandon Allen beat them, and he couldn't do it. And I think if they got enough speed on the perimeter so that they can kind of limit some of the things that Dak Prescott can do, I think A&M can win this game, you know, something like 35-25. So I was very, very impressed with the way that A&M handled itself composure-wise, down two touchdowns and coming back to win that thing in overtime.
As much as it pains me, I'm going A&M also. I think that, don't get me wrong, Mississippi State played a really good game against LSU, but they also almost gave it away at the end, and they did go into LSU territory and win, but I think A&M overall is probably a little bit better team.
So, Stephen, I agree. I think people are overreacting to Mississippi State's win at LSU. I agree with your assessment there. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but
no, that's all I had to say. I just think that I think Mississippi State played the game of their life. I think LSU kind of walked out thinking we got this, and by the time LSU figured it out, it was too late to come back.
Yep.
Okay, and then we have number 3, Bama Alabama, at number 10, Ole Miss. I think I already know who everybody's going with. I'll go ahead and throw mine out that I'm thinking Alabama, because I'm going to pick Alabama until somebody beats Alabama.
I'm going to pick Alabama, too. I think it's going to be a very close game. I think Ole Miss has a much better defense than in past years, and that'll keep them in the game. But I like Alabama in this one, too.
I'm going to go with the Tide. Yeah, I'll go with the Tide. I mean, look, what Ole Miss is, Alabama owns this series over the Rebels, and even though it's in Oxford, which, by the way, might have the best tailgate scene of any school in college football or rivals anyone over at the Grove, obviously that's immaterial, but I just wanted to point that out. I've really been impressed with the way Blake Sims has played. You know, what did they have, over 660 yards against Florida? We can say whatever we want to about Florida, but I really think that Alabama's offense actually might be better. In fact, I don't think it's so much pedestrian as it is the fact that it is so diverse now. I mean, you've got so many options in terms of the way they – you know, the way Sims can throw it and the running options. You know, defensively, I don't think Alabama is as good as they have been in past years, but I think it's really tougher to play defense nowadays in today's college football than it was as early as 3 years ago, So I think Alabama can win this game something like 24-13. Sims throws for about maybe 300 yards and a couple of scores, and the Tide gets enough done, because I don't think Ole Miss has enough offense yet to stay with them.
Well, I think you're right. The thing for me with Bama is that I think that you're starting to see some of Saban. Saban, when Bama got really good, Saban got to where he could select players as opposed to having so much to recruit players. Mm-hmm. And he's very good at identifying talent, and he's very good at developing talent. But Bama out-personnels other team. They don't out-scheme them. And you're starting to see Bama have problems with, you know, they don't defend. You know, you looked at West Virginia. They were able to do some stuff to them. And Oklahoma was able to do some stuff to them. So I think that But I think this is a game where out personneling will work, you know, and so I think that, you know, superior personnel, I think, is generally going to produce wins, but I do think it is starting to slip away from Bama a little bit in that regard. Okay. Now, also we have, and this is one that I also have absolutely no idea on what to pick on, and that is number 14, Stanford, at number 9, Notre Dame. And I know, Kevin, I know you tend to follow Stanford and Notre Dame a little bit more than I do, so you want to start on this one?
Yeah, I mean, the Irish have played pretty well, you know, to get off to the start. I mean, they absolutely smacked Michigan in the jaw, and, you know, we can talk about Michigan's problems for another podcast. That could be his own show.
That's like smacking SMU. Come on.
Pretty much, yeah, but that would be an insult to Michigan. But anyway, but, you know, really, if you think about it with the Irish, ever since Everett Golson, whatever academic errors in judgment he made a couple years ago, whatever that is, you know, he's really played well. Now, you could look at their first four wins over Rice, Michigan, and Purdue, and Syracuse, are kind of like, meh, okay. And they're going to get a very solid Stanford team, a team that I think they beat 2 years ago late in South Bend. I'm going to favor the Irish here short because I think Stanford – you know, when I look at Stanford's team, guys, is that, you know, it's great. I love Stanford's style of offense. I love the two tight end look with a quarterback and an I formation and that sort of thing. I'm not taking anything away from Baylor's offense. It's just kind of how I am in terms of what I love in watching an offense because they can just run it, smacking them out. However, when an offense like that kind of gets stalled, it kind of looks choppy and ugly and messed up, and then it kind of shuts down a little bit. And that's what happened when they lost at home to USC a couple weeks ago. I know Hogan, Stanford's quarterback, I don't think he's played particularly well. They got a gift win at Washington last week because Washington tried a fake punt, and it blew up in their face, and so it gave Stanford the Cardinal a short field, and so they were able to score in the late stages to pull that one out in Seattle. I'm going to go with the Irish here, maybe something like 21-17, because I think they're going to be able to, just for the sake of it's being played in South Bend, and I think Golson is just – I think Golson's playing really, really well right now, and I think Notre Dame's defense, regardless of their opposition, you know, you don't throw a shutout against air either, and I think that they'll take care of business against Stanford in a tight one.
Yeah, I'm going to pick Notre Dame too. I think if from a Baylor perspective, you'd rather Stanford win because then you basically knock Notre Dame out of getting in the Final Four conversation. Although I think that'll happen later in the season, because they have
2 weeks. By the way, Jake, just to jump in 2 weeks, they go to Tallahassee to play Florida State.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. They're going to be knocked out eventually. So I'm not totally impressed with Stanford. Their offense can struggle, I'm going to have to pick Notre Dame in this one. I've picked two road teams so far. That's kind of living on the edge. So I'm going to quit that trend and pick Notre Dame at home.
Well, I thought that we would end up with some disagreement on this. I'm also going Notre Dame, primarily because they're at home. Kevin, one of the points that you made about Stanford and their offense, when people watch this game, you know, it's really going to have a feel of like a late 70s, early 80s game. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, because both of these offenses are more, you know, like ball control, shorten the game, chew the clock, you know, get it. And get it in. You know, I know that, you know, when you're watching Baylor, sometimes you turn around, these games are like 3.5-4 hours. I think this game's going to be they shouldn't sell the extra commercial spots because I think they're going to chew clock, and I don't think this is going to be a long game. But I think Notre Dame is going to come out on top in it. All right, and then we have number 19, Nebraska, at number 10, Michigan State. Now, the interesting thing in this is that Nebraska is, with Penn State being upset by Northwestern, Nebraska is now the last undefeated team in the Big Ten. And that would be, so for the Big Ten to have, and the Big Ten doesn't get a lot of respect right now. But the thing is, so I feel like if the Big Ten team is going to try and get into the playoffs, they're going to have to be undefeated. So I think that Nebraska is probably their last hope, but I don't think Nebraska is good enough to go undefeated. Jake, your thoughts on it?
I only disagree with that in one area. I think people like Michigan State so much that a one-loss Michigan State could get into the playoff depending how other things shake out in other conferences. I'm impressed with them. They play excellent defense, and their offense actually has a little bit of life to it now. I'm going to pick Michigan State, whereas Nebraska, I think, you know, some teams kind of get into the top 25 based on name. I haven't seen a lot from Nebraska to make me think they're a top 25 team right now, and I don't think we're going to see it Saturday either.
Now, here are the wins for Nebraska, just to let you know. Blew out Florida Atlantic, had to get a touchdown late to beat McNeese State at home, won on the road convincingly at Fresno State, beat an up-and-down Miami team at home 2 weeks ago, and then they smacked a very very, very below average Illinois team last week. Now, having said that, I do think the Cornhuskers are better than what they were last year. I mean, Amir Abdullah is, I think he's the all-time leading rusher in Nebraska history. He's already at 833 yards going into this game in East Lansing. So he's having a great year. Tommy Armstrong has done a very good job of running this offense. They're a little bit more balanced there in Lincoln this year than what they have been in the past. Although the X factor of Bo Pelini making the right decision always kind of rears its ugly head in certain situations. With Michigan State, you know, obviously they had the tough loss at Oregon, a game where they led it later, you know, midway through the third quarter, and then it just got away from them. And Jake, you make the point that they could be the Big Ten's representative in the Final Four if things kind of fell in that direction. And that would probably be the Big Ten's best option to be for the Final Four participation, if you will, just because they've got the most complete team. I love Connor Cook. I think he's a really solid quarterback. I don't know if they've got enough consistency in their running game just yet. They're still trying to figure that out. But I think Sparty wins the game something like 34-24. It's a nationally televised game at night, so this is the Big Ten's opportunity to kind of show itself off, and even though it won't be playing against another Power 5 team, it'll be within itself. But maybe the caliber of play kind of gets some people to kind of look at them and go, they're better than we thought, even though the September interconference games didn't turn out the way the Big Ten thought they were. I'm going to go Michigan State.
Okay, I'm taking Michigan State also. One of the problems that Nebraska has is it's not in a real heavy recruiting category. Ever since the Big Eight broke up and Oklahoma went in the South Conference and that split up that Nebraska-Oklahoma rivalry, now they've lost their Texas recruiting grounds where they used to get a lot of players. They don't have a real rival anymore. It's just very hard for Nebraska to make noise, you know, anymore. It's just that there's just not enough talent around them to build a top 10 team. You know, Michigan State, on the other hand, it's in a very highly populated area. It's become, Michigan State used to be kind of an afterthought after Michigan, but Michigan has really fallen on hard times lately. So Michigan State is in still a decent recruiting area, and they're probably the class of the Big Ten. So, yeah, I'm going Michigan State. Before we jump out of the national games, Death Watch, is it Brady Hoke? Brady Hoke, the Michigan coach?
Yeah.
Okay. Firing watch on Hoke. He is in a big kind of controversy right now after running a quarterback out on the field. He's with a concussion, and he said they didn't have a concussion, and then some of the med staff came out and said, well, he did show concussion symptoms, yada, 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 yada. And let's face it, there's not a lot of love for him anyway around Michigan. Do y'all think he survives through the end of the season?
No. No. I mean, I think the concussion thing will be their public reason, or one of them, for firing him. But I think the other reason will be that he's not going to have a winning record. I mean, they're 2-3 right now. They're at Rutgers. I think they could lose that one. I think they'll lose to Michigan State and Ohio State. You're looking there, you know, at six losses. Then you got to beat Penn State, Maryland. You know, I mean, they have a crappy schedule because it is the Big Ten. But I think they could go 5-7. And look, 5-7, coupled with throwing a concussed player on the field, is not earn you another season, especially in Michigan.
I think with Hoke, I think I watched that game against Minnesota, and they physically just got whipped by Minnesota, which is really unheard of. I mean, what Minnesota won that game against Michigan for only like the fourth time since like 1976, and really they're the more physical team in the game. That was the thing that really struck me about that, was how physical Minnesota played in that game against it. But getting back to the concussion situation there, the whole thing about the disorganization of the team on the sidelines, really where it stands out is how Shane Morris comes off the field. Devin Gardner comes into it on a second or third play from scrimmage. He loses his helmet on a play out of bounds, and they've got to get the third string quarterback in there to take the snap. But he has the wrong helmet, so he can't get out there. So in by college rules, when you lose your helmet, you've got to come out for a play. So because McCauley, the third string quarterback, doesn't have his helmet, they've got to send Morris back out there, who's hobbling and woozy or whatever he is.
Call a timeout. It's simple as that.
Yeah, it's just, and they didn't call timeout. It was just complete sideline chaos. And the fact that that they completely botched it and the way they handled this, and then when it comes to the point where on Tuesday afternoon the university president issues a public apology to Shane Morris and his family and talks about disappointment over the way it was handled, you know, they're going to probably let Brady Hoke obviously coach. It's too late now to fire him for the Rutgers game. But let's just say if Michigan loses this game, and it may not matter even if they win it, but if they lose to Rutgers on Saturday, then he'll be fired on Sunday. And that will be their out. Just say, well, he hasn't met they can use the guise of they haven't met expectations, and then they can kind of transition into the way that things happened with the Shane Morris incident and so forth. That is one of the blue blood programs of college football, and that thing's been an absolute disaster since about 2009. And it's a shame too, because you know it's college football's all time winningest program, and they can't get their act together there. I mean, I think a lot of people thought that Brady Hoke, after his first year there when they won the Sugar Bowl over Virginia Tech, that Michigan was back and they're on their way, and they've just been absolute on a major decline. They looked so bad against Kansas State in the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl. It was kind of embarrassing. And then to get it handed to you like they did at Notre Dame, and then they score only a defensive touchdown against Utah, and then Minnesota, a team that they owned for decades, goes in there and whips them like they do. It was just one of those things where I think that program's in a real tailspin right now. In a way, I feel bad for Brady, because it's that mob mentality. It's that mob mentality thing that we saw a couple of weeks ago with the NFL players, with Adrian Peterson and Ray Rice and Roger Goodell and that sort of thing. And we're seeing it again, where just all of a sudden the forces just conspire to jump all into your house until with axes and picks and fire and fire club, you know, torches and things like that, where it's kind of nasty and it's kind of sickening. But at the same time, given where we are in today's society, as much as I don't like it, if Hoke survives this year through the regular season, he will not be back in 2015.
I agree. Yeah. I think we're touching on too many social issues for this podcast, though. So let's
start. I will throw out there that, yeah, you do have a mob mentality in sports now, where, you know, you do the old 1984 3 minutes of hate on people. But the fact that people have this irrational love of sports is the same reason that people listen to our podcast. It's the same reason that coaches are making $5-6 million a year. It's the reason that quarterbacks are making $100 million a year. So, you know, hey, you know what? You get the big bucks, you know, you get the other end of it too, which is that people have irrational expectations.
Yep.
Okay. Running around the Big 12. Iowa State at number 21, Iowa State at number 21, Oklahoma State. I'll start out on this one. Iowa State is a decent team, but what you saw last year was they lost close games. At a certain point in time, they started mailing it in. They may play Oklahoma State well, but I think Oklahoma State takes them out, and I think if they don't do it this game, I think after this game, this is going to be when you start seeing them getting ready for round ball.
I agree with what you said there. I think they're a little better than they were last year. And I don't think Oklahoma State is as good as it was last year. Dax Garmon, he throws it downfield a lot for Oklahoma State, but so far he hasn't shown it much in the mid-range game. So I think it's going to be close, but I'll pick Oklahoma State just because, you know, they are the better team. They are at home, and they should win this one.
Well, and since I've been accused on this podcast of being the leader of the Mike Gundy fan club by a certain MC on this thing, I'm going to go with Oklahoma State, too. I don't even know if they would be – they should be ranked right now because, you know, they beat Tech, but really their other couple of wins are kind of like, okay. But I think Oklahoma State will take care of business here against Iowa State for no other reason that they're more talented, a younger team, but they're getting better. And, again, I think that they'll take care of business.
Well, I think that they're being ranked off playing Florida State close.
Yeah, I think so, too. Well, that and they were a good team last year, and even though they didn't return a ton, you know, last year's results do have a bearing on the next season. So.
Yep.
Now, TCU broke into the top 25 this week, and I have a feeling this isn't the SEC. So I have a feeling TCU's foray into the top 25 is probably going to be fairly short, as the Big 12 isn't the SEC. If you lose a game in the Big 12, you do drop. Mm-hmm. And so we got number 4, Oklahoma, at number 25, TCU. This is not going to be a cakewalk, but TCU tends to break all the rules, and I'm not talking about on the field, but they play better away from home than they do at home, and I think Oklahoma's geared up.
Kevin?
TCU always plays Oklahoma pretty tough, even though Oklahoma's won the last two meetings, but a touchdown or 10 points or less in the last two meetings. I was actually at Eamon Carter 2 years ago when Oklahoma had to survive that game out there when they actually split the Big 12 title with Kansas State. But I think, you know, and then the other thing is that, you know, Keith Ford, Oklahoma's top running back, he's probably not coming back for this game. Doesn't sound like it. Charles McFarland, one of their defensive linemen, doesn't look like he'll be back yet for this game for the Sooners. So TCU's defense is not that great. Their offense is not that great. And really, even though they scored a ton of points against worthless SMU and against Samford, And again, I talked about the fact that I saw them play Minnesota a couple weeks ago. I still have my issues with the consistency in the offense, and I'm looking for a playmaker. Deontay Gray may be that guy for them. I do think, and by the way, I just looked. Oklahoma won in Fort Worth last year, or 2 years ago, 24-17, and they won in Norman last year, 20-17. And remember, TCU went to Norman in 2005 and upset Oklahoma when Oklahoma was a top-five team. So that kind of gives you a quick thumbnail sketch of those games. I expect another tight one. I expect Oklahoma to win it. I think Trevor Knight will do it. We'll get enough plays out of the passing game, and I think he'll do. The difference will be at quarterback. He's more polished. Trevon Boykin still has a ways to go, and Oklahoma wins this game fairly close by margins. What we've seen in the last 2 years.
I agree with everything you said. I think it's going to be a close one too. To throw in a quick Baylor homerism. This is great that Baylor obviously hosts TCU next week. Last year, TCU knew it was out of the bowl picture and had an off week to prepare for Baylor. Now this year, they're coming off a game against number 4 Oklahoma and then have to go to Baylor. So, you know, from a Baylor standpoint, it's kind of the schedule situates nicely for TCU coming to Waco. Now onto this game, though. I think it's going to be close because I think TCU's defense is just one of the best at defending spread offenses, and I don't think Trevor Knight is a bona fide passing quarterback, and I think that plays into TCU's favor because they can maybe make him one-dimensional. I think it's going to be close, but I do see Oklahoma winning this game. I won't be surprised if TCU wins, though, just because you know, like you said, they play Oklahoma close, and I like that defense.
Okay, now our next one is one, it's Texas Tech at number 23, Kansas State. And, you know, Texas Tech, boy, they've 7 games into last season, if you had said they're going to be where they are now, nobody would have believed you. you know, they had 2 quarterbacks walk out on them. Their defensive coordinator comes in and gets dismissed for not having, I don't know,
wits about him.
Yeah, Baker Mayfield's father called Cliff Kingsbury a scoundrel. And it's one of the things, y'all know, I have talked about with Kingsbury, and when I started wondering about it was when 2 quarterbacks bailed at once, and I said, you know, I don't know if it's great to let 2 quarterbacks walk, you know, and say I'm going to place all my bets on this guy. And I'm thinking, isn't he out this game, or do they know?
You know, hasn't been decided. Davis Webb, Texas Tech quarterback, has not been decided. So, you know, who knows?
I think it's a game time decision.
Yeah,
but the thing is that Tech is offense, they're not defense, and if they don't have, you know, if they had their 2 of their 3 best quarterbacks left in the offseason, their third one may, if he plays, he may not be 100%, and they're at Kansas State. I think Kansas State wins this one, but I don't think you see this huge score. I think it'll be a typical Kansas State victory of they'll go down the field and, you know, nail it, you know, and they'll get a win, but they're not going to embarrass anybody. They'll just win.
I'm going to go 37-27 Kansas State. Texas Tech does what it does best, commit a ton of penalties, and then we'll hear the predictable Cliff Kingsbury talk. Yeah, those are on us. We've got to clean that up. We've got to do a better job. If I could had a dime for every time I heard Cliff Kingsbury said that about his penalty problems there, I could retire from this site. But I can't. But anyway, it's and regardless of whether or not, even if it's Davis Webb or Patrick Mahomes, the true freshman out of White House playing a quarterback, the defense is what it is. Mark Smith or whoever else is helping run that defense. You are what you are, to quote a famous coach, and I don't think that Tech's going to have enough answers on defense to stop anybody.
Yeah, I think Kansas State's had 10 days off after the Auburn game to really stew over losing a game they could have won, and I think they take out their frustration on Texas Tech. Not a blowout, but I do think they win, and Texas Tech will be in a lot of self-doubt after this weekend if they lose, and especially if they lose big. And
it could mean the season for big.
What's that?
It could mean the season for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. They they'd be, you know, 3 losses, right?
Yeah.
And you've still got Oklahoma and Oklahoma State and Baylor and TCU and, you know, shoot, West Virginia and Texas for that matter. Yeah, I mean, if they lose, which they're probably will, I mean, yeah, they're staring down bowl ineligibility. That's pretty early in the season to think about.
Okay, and now we have the Weissless Kansas Jayhawks heading to West Virginia. And Jake, you want to start us off with this one?
Yeah, sure. I think if Charlie Weiss's mentor, Bill Belichick, took over for Kansas this week, they wouldn't have a chance at West Virginia. So, West Virginia and West Virginia big.
Me too. Although I will say this, I thought that Clint Bowen handled himself in the Big 12 coaches call extremely well and talked about how excited he was to have this opportunity to coach these kids. He wants to try and put himself in a position so that he'd be considered for the full-time job there. And who knows, maybe it could turn out for him. But I think West Virginia, though as disappointing as their 2 losses have been to OU and Alabama, I think they have their way with the Jayhawks on Saturday.
Yeah, and whoever takes over the Kansas program full-time, they're going to have the same, I think maybe even a little greater level of rebuilding job than Briles did when he came to Baylor.
You know, I agree. I might even say it's bigger just because he's in Kansas and not Texas, where there are 400 kids assigned with Division I schools every year. That might make it even more difficult.
Yeah, it's going to be a rough time for them.
Yeah.
Well, and then plus the fact too, you got a school too that is a basketball first school too, and that program will always be in the shadow of basketball.
Yeah, and then our last one is Baylor at Texas.
Hey, Stephen, you start us off. What do you got?
I'm putting Baylor 38-7. I think that's a point. So what?
I said I think I'm more surprised at the 7 points than anything. Not the deficit, but just 7 points, huh?
I think that Texas may get something, but I do think Baylor wins this game pretty handily. I think Baylor's going to jump on them early, and I think that they're going to stay on them, and I don't think they're going to let up on the gas pedal. I don't think Texas can keep up with them.
I'll go Baylor 47-17. I think Texas will muster a little more offense. They might hit a big play downfield just because defensive backs will give up big plays. It just happens. But too many offensive weapons, too much speed. Texas is a slow team. I'm going to come out and say it. That's a slower team, far slower team than Baylor. And Baylor plays with controlled speed, if you know what I mean. And watch this game when it's played in space, much like it was played against Iowa State. When this game is played in space, even though Texas will have better athletes and probably make far more plays than Iowa State did, Baylor will still be athletic enough to beat Texas in space, to get around, to run through or whatnot, and make 7-yard hitch routes, 17 or 20-yard hitch routes, things like that. And because that's how the game is played, and I just think that Baylor's got too many options. And plus the fact, again, like I said earlier on this podcast, the only way Baylor loses games like this, the November 8th game at Oklahoma notwithstanding, is they're going to have to help somebody to do it. And they haven't shown a tendency to be careless with the football.
Well, I'm not going to make the same mistake I did last week and predict Baylor kicks a field goal. So I am going to say 7 touchdowns, Baylor 49, Texas 20. And I think, you know, that sounds like a lot of points for a school that struggled to put nearly that many, that many on Kansas or a little more. I think some of those points come late, kind of like with Iowa State. You know, Baylor's capable of scoring more, but I think Texas's defense is pretty good and could contain Baylor maybe early in the first quarter and second, but I think Baylor eventually break through. And, you know, you don't see Bryce Petty in the fourth quarter of games this year. You know, I think you maybe see him in the fourth quarter on Saturday, and because of that, you know, Baylor might score more late than they're used to doing, so... 49-20, Baylor over Texas.
So are you predicting a missed extra point for Texas or 2 field goals?
2 field goals.
Okay. And one of the other like little notes on here, you know, there's been a kind of a thing through the Big 12. You've heard several coaches complain that Texas would get the calls in close games. And that was, if that was the case, it was because Texas was in position to go to the big bowl games. Texas isn't going to get the benefit of the doubt on calls to get people to big bowl games, if you're a conspiracy theorist.
Well, I'm sure you'll still find a ton of Baylor fans who think they're going to get screwed by pro-Texas refs anyway.
Yeah, I'm sure there's probably going to be a call early in this game that everyone's going to go, that was interesting, so just be prepared for that.
Yeah. Anyway, that wraps it up for us this week, and we will catch you next week on the Sikkim Sportscast.
The Sikkim Sportscast is an independent opinion and analysis-driven program from the staff and does not represent the views or opinions of either Rivals or Yahoo. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.